Welcome. This is Larry Stoller, and I'm delighted you're joining us here for another free educational webinar brought to you by the Traditional Chinese Medicine World Foundation. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Cowan. Dr. Cowan is a Western-trained pediatrician who throughout his career has been integrating his deep love of Chinese medicine in his work with children and families. In this webinar, Dr. Cowan is going to be sharing with us lessons he's learned from the children he works with. In particular, what they've taught him about the power of saying yes to stress. So, Stephen, welcome. Glad you're here with us. I wonder, what's one of the first things that comes to mind for you when you think about children and stress?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the whole concept of stress and the whole concept of self, self-discovery. You know, working with children over the last 30 years, I've gotten to see that whenever there's resistance, there's suffering, right? It's a very straightforward, very Tai Chi principle, right? Very Taoist principle that whenever we create resistance in situations, we're going to increase our own stress and the stress of others around us. So when we talk about say yes to stress, I don't mean that stress is good or bad. I'm just saying it's a wonderful opportunity to deepen our understanding of who we are and who and how we are in the world, right? I think more and more I'm using this term how as a very basic principle of what I would call, for lack of a better word, radical contextuality.
Wow.
How well you're connected to your context. Because I think the concept that self is as an independent thing creates a huge amount of resistance and therefore suffering. The Buddha said this, Lao Tzu said this, Jesus said this. You know, it's a very common concept that the more we sever our connection to our surroundings, the more we're going to suffer. And the reason for that, and you see it developmentally in children. And for a while I mourned this. I was really upset about it because, you know, I've always said in every workshop and certainly at Building Bridges every year for the last 10, 11, 12 years, how many years I've been doing it there, that children are my teachers. And it's a kind of a cute phrase, but I really deeply mean it.
People who listen to you don't think you're being cute.
Yeah,
they hear you as so sincere and truthful.
They are masters. They are the true masters because they're so close to the source, particularly babies. And something happens around a year as a kid starts navigating with his body through the world, gets up and walks, he starts encountering, you know, what we call in child development object permanence, this belief or this illusion that things exist. I throw the mashed potatoes on the floor and it's still mashed potatoes because I've, you know, I can point at it and I can taste it. And so there's this kind of game, this playfulness that children go through in experimenting, which is a spiritual practice of testing the environment spatially first, bodily involvement with the world. And you watch that in children, and they're teaching me how to be in my body, or better yet, how my body is in me, how my first identity as a self is this body in space. And a lot of Qigong is about getting you back to that connection. And so little children are teaching that. They get up, they fall. They get up, they fall. They get up, they fall. Now, they don't get up and say, if I fall again, I'm never going to get up again. That would be resistance.
Right.
But they practice in this wholehearted way of they get up again. And they keep trying without any goal. They're not hoping to get enlightened. They're just playing in the world.
This is natural
that
play, isn't it?
That is true practice.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that you're hoping to achieve or attain. You're just practicing for the sheer fun of mastery. You're just trying to get good at something. You do it again and again and again. Michael Jordan played basketball and practiced for fun.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right? It wasn't work. Go practice your violin. I don't want to. That's resistance. Now there's suffering for everyone. Right? It was sheer, you know, learning to walk is a spiritual practice. And that's one of the first teachings. Well, I wouldn't say it's the first teaching because new parents who have a brand new baby where they don't know what the hell's going on, that's the true spiritual teaching. And what the child, the baby, is teaching us is how to stay grounded, how to stay centered, how to get out of our head, how to clear our head of judgments and stay on the ground floor.
How do they do that? What happens that allows that to happen?
So the first step in doing this as a teaching, right, as a baby teaching us, literally, is to, you know, when we talk about, you know, I love you from the bottom of my heart.
Yes.
Well, where is the bottom of the heart? In my mind, it's called the Dantian.
Mm-hmm.
It's around the belly button. It's the center of your gravity. In Chinese Tai Chi language, it's Zhongding, it's called. It's the central equilibrium, and it's way down low. It's, you know, what I tell parents is if you want to understand your child, stand under your child. Don't stand above your child.
Mm-hmm.
The word child can create this kind of bizarre hierarchy where we know better. So the first step is to admit, I don't know anything yet as a new parent. And it's easy because they're forcing us to reconcile with that. And I'm going to find out by engaging with this little human being who is a master, who's showing me just how little I know, and that's okay. It doesn't mean it's a problem. So the first step is while you're holding a baby wrapped up in your arms, in her, you know, wrapped up, and you're holding it, it's teaching you how to stay grounded in yourself and clear the decks. The decks being the mind of all the judgments, all the preconceived ideas of what a good parent is, of how a baby should be, all the shoulds, clearing that. And what we call that in, you know, spiritual practices is soft focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just looking.
Right.
For the sake of looking, not looking at something or looking for something. Just taking it all in while this baby is wrapped up in your arms, just taking it all in sheer wonder and mystery and awe. Clearing the top floor, and then the middle is the heart. And there are endless array of feelings in the heart that are constant, flowing. What I call the heart these days is, I think the heart is a weather vane. And it's basically telling us the weather at any given time, as long as we're connected to the context. When we take our feelings out of context, we start thinking in absolutes, we're back in our head again. Sadness is bad. That's an absolute statement.
Mm-hmm.
No, sadness is just a feeling. Disappointment is just a feeling. It's going to change, guaranteed to change. There's this term that, you know, I apply to dealing with kids all the time, which I think is an essential term. It comes from the I Ching, and it's bian tong. It means flux and flow, or change and continuity. So change often creates a great deal of resistance in humans and suffering. When we resist the change that's natural and constant, we're going to suffer and others around us are going to suffer. Right? Change, but you can't change change. Change is part of it. But the second part, the continuity within change, is quite a beautiful term, that there is something continuous running through all the change. And when you can tap into that, you relax. You're not trying to fight it. You're going downstream with the current. So teaching, I do this very, very practically with new parents as they hold a baby, of how to access this flux and flow, the changing movements of the baby moment to moment, while staying plugged in on the ground floor to something deep that's continuous, that'll hold you. Call it gravity. You know, you can use gravity as a way of connecting to it. Just gravity alone, your own weight, means you're connected to the earth. You're steady, you're solid. You could use your breath, right, to stay grounded. Not doing breath in a very formalized, artificial way, but allowing the breath to be natural. There's something continuous in it. So accessing the continuity within change is one of these beautiful teachings that children are constantly throwing in my face. Now, this is a primal teaching. And when you do that, you start discovering what we might call in Zen circles your true self, right, which lies beneath the name, the profession, the story. It lies beneath all that, right? It lies beneath even your body, because your cells every 7 years change completely. So it's something that's constant or continuous that's running beneath that, that is your true self. After all, you know, we have all these selves, right? I have myself the doctor, myself the parent, myself the man, myself the American, myself the earthling. You know, I could go on and on, all these different selves. But what I'm talking about is what Joanna Macy, the ecologist, calls the ecological self. Right, which is something that defines me through my context, through my surroundings, my very specific surroundings. And I'm willing to go with the fact that who I am is interdependent with where I am and how I am, when I am. You know, that my identity, my self-identity, is defined by context. Not independent of it, because when we sever that tie, we're going to suffer. And children, when they're young, before they have language, are very keenly aware of how well we're connected to or not connected to that context. And I'll give you a great example, a practical example. When I was running my busy pediatric practice, if I was preoccupied because there was a sick kid in room 3 and I walked into room 4 and there was a little baby there, that baby would cry. And it would be a teaching to me to step back out of the room, clear myself, and walk back into the room, leaving everything behind, and then the baby would smile. That's a master teaching me.
That's so beautiful.
And it's very practical. It's very real. You know, it's very testable, right? It's not like some made-up woo-woo thing. It's a very practical thing that – so the baby, for the first year, is learning how to mobilize on the ground floor, kind of navigate what we might call the space self, the spatial self,
mm-hmm.
the body self. Mm-hmm. And then around a year, they've been practicing falling and moving and walking. And then between 1 and 2, you know, they go through this stranger anxiety and separation anxiety stage because they haven't quite developed the language that other humans have. And this is this humanizing of the self. Becoming human, part of the human club, means that we start using these words. And that's where a lot of trouble begins. It's the second big teaching, right? The first is how to clear yourself to hold the baby and engage on a physical self. But in the second year to third year, the teaching becomes a different kind of self-teaching, self-awareness, self-consciousness, which is how language distorts reality and how the language we use can mess everything up, can create more suffering. We call it the terrible twos. This immense suffering that children kind of have to go through because they're frustrated. They were this clear-eyed, Buddha. And
right.
Now they're being humanized into playing the game that, you know, every time I say the word candy, you're going to give me candy. Or every time I say mommy, mommy's going to magically appear. And when it doesn't happen, we now have put our faith in this game of labeling. And we start, by the end of the twos, believing that the name is the reality. And we start forgetting the great Tao source, where we were. It's still there, but we're kind of papering it up, right? We're covering it up with words now. And we're starting to put our faith on words. And why do we do that? It's because, as I said earlier, we have this kind of need to pin reality down because it drives us nuts that it's always changing. Right? And so we use language to pin things down. And then we put our faith in that. Right? That the word means, that becomes the truth. And then we start creating a lot of problems. Now, it's interesting, the studies that have been done on Asian children versus Western children, where parents of Asian children will label verbs first, and then they'll label nouns. Whereas in the West, we label nouns first. And I find that fascinating because labeling verbs first is much more akin to the practices you and I are involved in.
Mm-hmm.
The chi is a verb. It's not a noun. And everything that has a verb to it has chi. And chi is just a fancy term for whatever is changing.
That's great.
And right, and so this reality of recognizing our feelings as always changing, which is chi, a direct experience of chi in us, in our heart, in the flow of ourselves, becomes this very emotional state of trying to, you know, basically what happens in the twos is we say no. No! It's the power scream of the two-year-old, right? No! I don't want to, right? So that's resistance and that's suffering. It's resistance to the flow because we're starting to believe in words as defining and delineating the great flowing change. And so then we get into the threes and fours and we learn to try to compromise that, right? By playing with others and, you know, by kind of learning the game. And so in a way, we have to kind of fall from grace a little bit in humanizing ourself, the self, in order to realize there's something missing, which opens us up to spiritual practices that for the rest of our lives we may, if we're lucky, get involved with. But it's built in that you kind of have to cover up the light that's inherent in all of us, to then spend time uncluttering it to find it again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And children are always teaching us that. And in terms of understanding, you know, this idea, this kind of, for parents, you know, they'll say, well, what can I do to teach my child spiritual practices? My answer is always the same. It starts with you, you know. You walk the walk. Children are observing every single thing we're doing. Telling a child never works. Being is the teaching, right? You know, one of the phrases I've been using lately with parents is, we're not here to teach our child a lesson. We're here to teach them a skill that will enable them to keep growing. When we get into this teaching lesson thing, it's a top-down hierarchy. It never works. It only creates more resistance. The heart clenches in revolt. Every kid becomes Spartacus, resisting, saying no, because they don't want to be told what to do, and you can't make them do it anyway. And so it's just suffering for everybody. So walking the walk, having a spiritual practice, and not even telling them what to do, just letting them observe you. making it part of your daily routine, that's enough, more than enough. Trying to force anything in children never works, and it's certainly not the Taoist way.
Stephen, let me pause for a second and encourage people to maybe take a deep breath and take in a bunch of what you've said here already, and also remind everyone that we're talking to Dr. Stephen Cowan, and Stephen's going to be joining us at the Building Bridges conference this fall, September 14th through 17th, in Reston, Virginia. And if you can find all the information about the conference and what Stephen will be presenting there on the tcmworld.org website, just go to the conference tab there and you'll find out, and you can learn more and be with Stephen and the other speakers, many of whom are regular attendees to the conference and have spoken there for years, just like Stephen has. And so I think, you know, what you've said here is really so beautifully stated, so succinctly, clearly stated. And we started, right? We started with say yes to stress, and you said right away, you know, that resistance to the to change, to challenge, to life that produces suffering. And I wonder if you could say some more about that in terms of what we bring with us as we mature that leads to more self-discovery, and how self-discovery can also help us continually get better at this dance of change.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. So this ground floor being, this Dan Tien living from the Dan Tien, my old Tai Chi teacher, Chen Manchin, used to say, you know, put the mind in the Dan Tien, right? Meaning get out of your head and stay centered where the center really is. One of the things I find in this resistance business, you know, our goal should be to try to avoid in any way creating resistance in our children, because it's just going to hurt them and make you suffer. And that becomes, I don't mean to imply anything goes. The word discipline actually means to practice. The disciple is a practitioner, right? It doesn't mean to punish, and it doesn't mean to reward. It just means to practice. And the five basic ground floor Dan Tien practices, playing, eating, breathing, sleeping, moving, right? And they're based on the five phases. Movement is wood, playing is fire, eating is earth, breathing is metal or gold, and water is sleep. These are the fundamentals, right? And these become our discipline, our practice on the ground floor. As we move up the ladder into our heart, I realize that a lot of times as kids enter the world of this humanized game of language, of labeling reality and trying to pin it down and stop the flow, there's this fixed mindset that you're familiar with, of this, the language we use becomes a discipline for us, because often I find parents kind of engaging from these very weird kind of rigid stances of I know better, or analyzing, or discriminating, or advising, or essentially all linked to my job as a parent is to fix my child, which is always going to be disastrous. That's not what we're here for.
That's very strong, isn't it? That it's disastrous.
It's disastrous. It always ends poorly when our job as a doctor or as a practitioner or as a parent is, if we see our job as fixing problems for our children, it always ends badly. If we reframe that and say our we're here to promote or enrich growth, to encourage growth, right? To encourage connection with context, as opposed to just fixing, you know, putting out fires. It changes everything. So often when we're confronted with, you know, your child comes to you at 3 or 4 and says, "Mommy, I hurt my arm," and our first inclination is to put out the fire, to fix it. I'll make it better, which is not an empowerment, actually. And it makes pain bad. It makes pain the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It feeds right into the drug companies. It feeds right into the whole establishment of good and bad as, you know, disease as bad, as opposed to as a teaching along the way, as a challenge that we take up, right? So this concept of fixing things, whether it's even sympathizing with your child. "Oh, you know, I know what that feels like. I feel terrible that you're suffering." That seems innocuous enough, but it actually doesn't empower growth. It makes us both victims. What I want to encourage is empathy. And empathy is the ability to imagine what another person needs for growth. Let me say that again. Let's breathe through that for a second. All right, everybody take a breath. Breathe out, which is releasing. Empathy is the ability that we all have to imagine what another person needs. The reason why we have that capacity is because we all have shared needs to grow. What do we need to grow, right? We need air and food, sleep, movement, you know, at the basic level. At the highest level, we need freedom and joy and unity and, you know, kind of grace and peace. And these are common needs. This is the ground we stand on together. So it's not that hard to imagine what another person needs. But when we actually do and we speak to it, when the little child says, "I hurt myself," "Oh, do you need a hug? Or are you feeling pain?" is honoring the human in that moment. It's not running away from it or panicking or calling the fire department or, you know, "Oh my God, you're in pain, I can't take it," right? Which makes a victim out of all of us. It's simply saying, "Oh my God," with wonder and awe. "Are you feeling pain? Wow. Do you need a hug? What is it that you need?" Now, when we develop that empathy, that literacy of empathy, which is highly contextual, highly linked to the particular circumstances we're in, because it's going to change later. Our needs are always changing. It becomes this unity. We've bonded. We've connected. You're not alone. You're safe. And however stressful, we can cope. So I think that empathy, which is I feel is a very earth-based kind of practice, the common ground, the shared need, you know, love, which is a unifying agent, is not, there are no strings attached to that. It's unconditional in that way.
I heard you say something while you were describing this process of empathy and where it can take us, that the other side of over-exaggerating, let's say, the concern over pain, that would mm-hmm. be like making a mountain out of pain, making a
yeah.
mountain out of things that are stressful.
Amplifying.
Yeah. What you're describing.
And I see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, you know, originally you had asked me to talk about, you know, where are the opportunities in children to practice spiritual practices, and mm-hmm. and I find that is one. You know, when children are in pain, it's a real, true blue opportunity to practice.
Mm-hmm.
because you can ground someone. You know, one of the classic examples is when I was running my busy peds practice, you know, and I'd have to draw blood on a kid, and I had gotten very good at drawing blood and getting kids to laugh through it. And every once in a while, mom or dad would come in, and I'd say, I'm going to draw the kid's blood. And the first thing the mother or father would do is turn the kid's head away. Don't look!
Yes.
Now, what the problem with that is twofold. One, that's them overreacting.
Yeah.
That's making a mountain out of a molehill. And two, the child's imagination is so vast, it's way worse than what I'm actually doing. Their imagination takes them, what is he, cutting my arm off? So it's a lose-lose. I say, what are you doing? No, let him watch. It's really interesting. And then it doesn't hurt. That's trust, that this child can deal with it. Not trusting makes them not able to deal with it. You know, it reinforces the fact that, oh my God, you can't handle this pain.
Well, that's right. In the frame of self-discovery that we're playing with, when you look, you know, there's a chance with your support, because you're teaching also, your connectedness, your
That's right.
embrace,
I'm
your empathy.
Staying grounded.
Grounding
in myself,
supports this child.
In the unity.
Yeah,
right.
Discovering something, you know, really only that child can discover that moment.
That's
from the experience, the actual experience they're having.
That's right. That's right. Exactly right. Where I used to see it most obviously was when I was a senior resident in the busy city hospitals. The interns would just be freaking out, and they would cause all kinds of damage. And I would teach them to meditate in the middle of the ER on how to ground themselves before they ever touched a patient. I wouldn't let them touch a patient. And I'd say, before you take anybody else's pulse, take your own pulse.
It's such great
to really
ground,
Stephen. You know, because we do tend to get up into our head and judge things as bad and good and wrong and right, instead of clearing all the judgments and just observing, just being clear from at the top and staying down below. Dan Tien, seeing. And you see a lot more that way. It's a martial arts technique. You can see more. When you have use soft focus, you notice very subtle movements in your environment because you're so connected contextually that you notice more things. As a martial arts defense mechanism, it's very powerful. But when you're up in your head, you're kind of myopic, tunnel vision, and you miss a lot. So the stress response brings you up into your heart and chest and head, and the parasympathetic nervous system brings you down below the diaphragm into your Dan Tien and into your feet and into the context, into the ground. And that's much more stable, much more practical, and you see more that way. You notice more. Very, very practical to get parents to hold a baby that way. They instantly see the baby shift their energy when they're holding a baby from the ground or when they're holding it from their head. Very, very practical. I mean, this is where the child is the teacher, because it's like they're the resource where you can actually see the evidence that none of this is just, this is not woo-woo philosophy. That is very testable stuff. And babies become... Yeah, go ahead.
I always think when we're talking, my reaction is that what you gained through your work as a pediatrician about learning through children, because you've accepted them as your masters, that mm-hmm. you've learned that every single thing you've said almost, right, applies to how adults operate, how we operate.
That's right, of course.
And, you know, so we have this conference coming up. And this year, you know, we have the theme of consciousness, self-discovery, and everyday health. And really, we've kind of touched on most of that here.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you say everyday health. I'm sorry?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We say every day health because we say, you know, through health, in other words, it could be through pain, through some, often mm-hmm. what wakes us up is some kind of physical condition. And
right.
we have it. And then there's the vehicle that takes us deeper into ourselves. And this is exactly what, you're doing such a, it's so inspirational when you describe it, what's available to us.
Yeah, go find a kid somewhere and you've got it. You know, remember that the zi in Lao Tzu, the symbol zi is child.
Mm-hmm.
The master, the symbol for master, zi, is child. Same symbol.
Beautiful.
So I agree, and I think that's what's great about the upcoming conference, is that one of the best things that listeners can know, can trust they're going to get from the conference, because I've been doing it for so many years, I've seen this happen with people who come for the first time. There's such a diversity of different practitioners and teachers, you know, this, you know, smorgasbord of different angles on the same thing. It's absolutely beautiful and very powerful, because it's always good to hear the message in different ways as a teaching device. You're much more likely to retain it when you've heard it said in slightly different ways, right? And that's the beauty of diversity. Nature loves diversity. As opposed to hearing the same thing the same way over and over again, is less likely to really be a living, chi-full nourishment. When there's diversity to it, it engages you in a different way. So one of the great things about the conference is there's all these different things going on and different ways to experience it. But because we're a community, we're a family, there's continuity within all of that change. So the conference itself is one of the only conferences I go to. I say this every year. I teach at a lot of conferences around the country. And there's not any that are like this, I think, because it's run by practitioners, where there is this transformation that takes place by day two, where people have kind of been bathing in it, and suddenly they're cleared out and the lights go on, and they, you know, because of this walking the walk, right, the conference itself is a kind of representation of everything that we've been just talking about, this continuity and change, and saying yes to that change.
That's really well said. I really appreciate how again how clearly you share with people what the conference, the spirit of the conference, is about. You also said earlier today, I just want to remind our listeners about this, when you're talking about young children, very young children, they're exercising their body in space, and it's kind of like Qigong. And the mm-hmm. conference is very much inspired by Qigong practice. And this year, we're making a deliberate effort to present more opportunities for our participants to experience Qigong, and so they have some opportunity to have a sense of what that might be for them in their life, and then they can see it in action in a broader, you know, conference like you're describing. So I think, you know, this would probably be a good place to stop right now. Is there anything that's on the tip of your tongue that you feel like, geez, I really needed to say this today?
Could go on and on. You know, there are lots of things that I could talk about. Here's what I'll leave. I'll leave you with something that I tend to leave as a prescription for parents that I've been working with. Okay? Prescription, you know, we'll call it, for engaging with the little master that's on your lap. Right? Okay? Ready?
Ready.
It's hear the pain in their need. Hear the pain in their no, in their resistance. Or you can apply it to yourself. Hear the pain within your own resistance to change. That's step one. That's clearing, that's like opening up your heart and applying empathy to either yourself or to your child. Hearing that there's pain within that no, within that resistance. Then move into the level of the heart and And then it's feel the need within that pain, which is just a need for growth, a need for connection, a need for being whole. And then when we get to the ground floor, it's to cherish the love that's in that need. So it becomes a sequence of moving out of your head and into the ground towards love. It's a very practical three lines. I'll send it to you so you can put it up there.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate it.
Because it's linked to three symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this building bridges, I'll be painting symbols, which will be fun because people get to experience that when I've done it before, and they see the symbols emerge as these powerful, powerful symbols in very ancient
Chinese
forms.
Characters.
Yeah, Chinese characters, but not calligraphy. They are the ancient seal forms that have a power within them, and they're all linked to everything we're talking about in terms of sort of healing and growing, promoting growth, self.
Okay. We look forward to it. And again, I want to thank you for being with us here and sharing all your wisdom. It's so evident that you've digested so much of your experience and created a beautiful garden of wisdom that you've shared here. You've shared it in the past, and you'll be sharing it in the conference. And to the listeners, yes, that we are too, believe me. And I want to invite again the listeners here to check out www.tcmworld.org and go to the conference tab and all the information about the agenda and the speakers. You can learn more about Stephen there. And all the speakers, the conference is September 14th through 17th in Reston, Virginia. It's a nice venue at the Hyatt Regency there. It's a lovely location. But mostly it's what happens inside, where we all get together and create a unique gathering of people who have great passion for this kind of learning, who want to discover and bring to the world a new way of thinking about health and wellness that allows us to capture our whole being and bring that to all our work and to ourselves. And again, we're focusing on consciousness and self-discovery and everyday health. I look forward to seeing many of you there. We have special early bird discounts until the end of June, so please take advantage of that and register as soon as possible. Bring your friends and look for us when we're there. Thanks again, Stephen. Look forward
Thank
to
you very
hanging
much,
with you
Larry.
Again.
And I look forward to hanging with you in September.
You bet. And all right, take care, everyone.
All right, be well.
Bye-bye.